My name's Bill. I'm an alcoholic. And, boy, are we podcasting this to the, around the world? Or get the microphone set. You know, welcome to my friends from Hong Kong. So, again, my name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic. Like I said, I'm my sobriety date is September 30th, 1995. My home group is now the Midtown Group in Washington, D.C. And like you said, I have a sponsor. He's right over there. And I sponsor people. One of them is down here, right over there. And unfortunately, for these guys that you know who know me, they've got along for about 50 minutes on their hands. But we just ate down the street at the at barbecue restaurant. So the pig and steak. And so I don't know. I think if I was with them, I'd be falling asleep. So we'll see after all that. I'm going to try to stay awake, and I'll try to keep you awake if I can with telling you what it was like, what happened, what it's like, or what I was like, what happened, what I'm like today. And I've got a lot of time, so I'll probably drag out of the archives some stories that I don't tell that often. Ooh. So I'll talk for a little while about what, you know, sort of what led up to, it's always hard to tell stories, you know, in sequence, because everything's in retrospect, and, but I'll try to, you know, tell what it was like at the time, and then how I got to AA, and all that. There's a lot's happened since, because I've been sober a while, and I came to AA in 1989, so, I didn't get sober in 1989, so there's a lot of, I think I have a lot of good and bad things to say about, you know, good things to do and things that are a bad idea to do, because I did it all, you know. So I guess the first important thing, in terms of drinking, I'm from a drinking culture, a drinking family. It was everywhere. I mean, and to me, it was just normal. You know, I grew up in New York, and Irish Catholic family. In AA up there, they say if there was no Irish Catholic alcoholics in AA up in that area, they'd be holding the meetings in a phone booth, you know. Because that's what the meetings are like, I'll tell you. It's just full of us where I'm from, in the Queens and Nassau County. And that's where I grew up. I was born in Queens, stayed there for a little while, went up to Long Island, and part of a big drinking Irish family, you know. And it's funny, I was in Annapolis last night, and I had a memory of, like, one of the last times I was there. Well, maybe 10 years ago. I guess that's a long, I've been there since, but there was a wedding out there, and I went with my cousins afterward. I was sober at the time, and I went with my cousins stupidly after the some reception. They went downtown, and I went with them. And it was one of the bars that I was right, one of the ones we walked by last night. And I was like, oh my God, it was a terrible mistake. As soon as I walked in, I knew it. Just awful. These guys, they were hitting it hard, you know, and so I come from that kind of a background where people drink when they're happy and they're sad and everything in between. And my parents were alcoholics. I didn't know that for a long time, but they didn't know that for a long time. And I can say that with assurance because they're both in the program today. So so they are alcoholics, you know, by their own admission. And growing up was, like I said, it seemed normal to me. And I can't really say much about it as a youngster. I mean, just, you know, there was drinking all the time. There was some strange behavior. It didn't really get bad until I was getting into high school. And their alcoholism just took off. And it got into all the things that happened. You know, I mean, my dad, a lot of things happened to him. His drinking led to a lot of circumstances is what happened. You know, he got into this job, and then he was just wasn't going to work. He was just staying at home. It was like a sales job, commission type thing. So he just wasn't leaving the house, and he was just drinking every day. And then he tried to stop drinking, and once he tried to start drinking, things went really crazy. Like, it was evident there was a big problem. And he was physically addicted to alcohol big time. I mean, he couldn't stop drinking for a day without getting the shakes and everything like that. And he went to detox after detox after detox. rehab after rehab over a period of 3 or 4 years. And finally, my mom, even though she, you know, her alcoholism was there too, but you know, she had enough of this, and she sort of gave him the boot. And I hadn't started drinking yet, so she started going to AA. She got sober first, and her brother was sober and tried to help my dad, but that didn't really work out. So, you know, she got sober, and I started going. I went to some counseling with her because she was going to some counseling. Went to, like, I think the counselors who told her to go into AA, actually. But I would go with her to that, and I went to Alateen a few times. And honestly, at that point, I had lots of self-pity, tons of it, and because of all these terrible things. I hated alcoholics, and I hated alcohol. But, and I saw that, you know, I vowed I would never do that, and I was never going to drink, and I was never going to be like my father, and I knew AA what it was. I knew it was a place for alcoholics to go, you know, old people, like my age, today, you know what I mean, like people that age and up, could go to AA, people in their 30s and 40s, you know, whatever, and if things got bad, that's where you went, and you could get sober. So I knew that, that's about what I knew, and I don't know, I started drinking. So I, at that point, I was in a Catholic all-boys high school. And I was very insecure, and that is not a great place for, you know, getting social skills. You know what I mean? You don't really learn a lot of, you know, smooth talk and, you know, meeting the females. You know, it just wasn't happening. I was really, I was intelligent, but I was really geeky, and had no, didn't, not, I don't know if that's any, hasn't changed, but back then it was a really, a, you know, today it can be an actual asset. Back then it wasn't an asset, and at all, and I, you know, I was just, you know, I read a lot, I did very well in school, adults loved me, my peers, you know, I didn't get along very well with, and girls were an alien species, and I started working very young because we lost everything when my dad, his alcoholism got bad. So I started working when I was young, when I was maybe 14. But I kept working. I paid bills at the house, and I paid for my own school. And which I didn't think was, now looking back, I guess that's not average, but that's what I did. And I don't know, I thought my brother was a lot, I mean, my brother was drinking and doing drugs, and so I was judging him, and my mom was getting sober, and it was, my dad was floating around. He'd pop up every once in a while trying to get sober, and then, you know, he was just getting worse and worse as his alcoholism advanced. I started drinking, so just that, that's just for background. None of that is a reason that I'm an alcoholic. I'm not a victim of circumstance. I don't think it's because my parents are alcoholic. I don't think any of that, because there's a lot of examples of people around here in this room whose stories I know, whose parents are just fine, normal, regular people, and they're the alcoholics in the family. And but I'm just trying to give you a backdrop from where I was when I took my first drink. You know, vowing never to drink, never to become, you know, be like my, you know, my family, not going to be like that. I went to this party. I was working in the supermarket, and I went to a New Year's Eve party. And this is where it all begins for me. So this is a crystal. I'm not going to tell too many drinking stories because everyone knows drinking stories. They're, you know, and most of mine are very similar. But this is the one that kind of defined it all. I went to a party with the older kids from my work. So I was about either 15 or 16, I can't remember which. And probably 16, I was kind of a late bloomer. So I went to this party, and I was really, really just a wreck. I couldn't talk to anybody. You know, I was like, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. Most of these people were about 2-3 years older. They're all drinking. They're all having a good time partying. And so I was like, what, you know, okay. So I drank. You know, I drank stupidly. You know, there was a punch that had everything in it, the mystery punch. I drank a lot of that. And then I drank like a bunch of shots of peppermint schnapps. And I, because, you know, it tastes good, it's like, you know, it's like licorice or whatever, it's peppermint, and you know, clears the palate. But you drink enough of that, which I did, and then you know the result. I mean, about, so first though, for about an hour, I had the best time of my life. I mean, up to that point. I was free of any worries. I was talking to everybody. I was talking to the girls. I was just having a great time. And this is what I was like, man. Because I'd always walked around with a block of nervousness, fear, and anxiety. I'd always had it. I had no, especially with interactions with other people, I had no idea, you know, especially my peers, I didn't know what to do. I was always kind of uncomfortable in social settings. And now, boom, it was like magic, you know, and I loved it. And then about an hour later, I started vomiting. And that continued, you know, that continued on for an eternity, it seemed like to me. And, you know, I felt like stuff was coming out I'd never even eaten, you know. It was bad. I was like, did I eat carrots? I didn't think so. Don't remember that, you know. And it was just awful. I was a puker, so there's going to be a lot of that in my story. I mean, just wasted some good booze that way, I'll tell you. And so I just, you know, and I make a nuisance of myself to my my friends. And they tossed me in the car, and they brought me home. And like good drinking friends, what did they do? They just tossed me on the lawn. Left me to my own devices. And I don't remember, I'm going to black it, but this, the rest of this is reported. Okay, everything from the vomiting on was a report. I don't know what happened. I was in blackout. For those of you who don't know what a blackout is, if you're new, you know those parts where you're doing things, but you're told about them, but you don't remember any of it? That's a blackout. It's different than passing out. You know, passing out I did too, but I had a lot of blackouts where, you know, you go places, you know? One guy once talked about it, it's almost like he felt like he was in Star Trek, because he'd be in the middle, and suddenly he'd be home. You know, like, boom, wow, it's like a transporter, you know, it's great, it's the best. There'll be a lot of that in my story, too. If you have those elements, you may have a problem with drinking, by the way. Most people, I don't, you know, have one of those, and they think it's a really bad thing, and they're like, my God, I don't remember what happened. This is awful, you know, and they know there's a problem, and they avoid that drinking behavior in the future. For me, it was like, you know, game on. Whatever. It's the price you pay for having a good time. And, you know, even though I don't remember the good time, at least somebody reported to me that I had a good time, so I took their word. So after, you know, I was thrown up, and I guess they just left me there. And I went to the... So what I forgot was, because I was drunk and in a blackout, is that I was supposed to go around the back and go in the back door. And then every night we chained the front door. So I broke the door down. And my mom came in, I guess, I don't know, like 2 in the morning. She's trying to get sober, you know. She's in her first year of sobriety. And there's the son who's the, like, my brother was the problem. You know, he was like the black sheep causing her problems. I'm the good boy, right? There I am on the floor, just covered in my own puke. Just a mess. I just broke the door down, you know. And there it is, you know. My introduction to drinking. And the next opportunity I had to drink, I took it. You know what I mean? Like, boom. You know, there was no discouragement. And just to contrast this, I tell this story every once in a while. I had a friend who I went to grad school with, lived in the same house with this guy. His name is Steve. And he would drink about a six-pack a week or less. Okay? About one beer every night or one beer every other night. Like, really expensive beer. You know, beer that was like, a six-pack costs as much as a case of crappy beer, which, you know, and so I would never buy such beer. It's a waste. You know, I could buy a thing of Meisterbrau, you know, or whatever, or Schlitz, or, you know, National Bohemian, or something like that, and he's getting a six-pack of this other stuff. So he's, you know, I guess he's what they call a non-alcoholic. And what he did was, he went out on New Year's one night, and he, 1 year, and he had liquor. And he drank, I guess, quite a bit of it, kind of like I did my first night drinking my New Year's from when I was a teenager. And he ended up throwing up. And I don't know, I don't remember if he had a blackout or not, but he definitely had the spins, the bed spins, all that good stuff, you know, where, you know, you're still moving, but you're staying still kind of thing. And he the next day he told me, he's like, I threw up. And I had the spins. This is, oh, I feel, I have a headache. My mouth is all, you know, dry. He's like, this sucks. This is terrible. He's like, I'm never doing that again, right? And he never did. From that day to this, as far as I know, you know, I've known him for years. I'm like, that's a normal reaction. You know, that's a non-alcoholic. That's like, something happened, and I'm going to, that I didn't, you know, it's probably not a good thing, and I'm going to stop. I'm not going to do that again. But to me, the hour where I was having that good time was totally worth the price. I mean, totally worth it. It, you know, it totally balanced in my little ledger, you know. So I, mentally, I mean, this is all in retrospect. I mean, my analysis of this. But all I know is the next time I had an opportunity to drink, I was all for it. And I didn't drink very much in high school, the rest of high school. I didn't have that many opportunities. I was pretty busy. But when I did have the opportunities, I took them. And things didn't really take off until college. And that's where things get kind of weird. Really weird. I chose my school based on alcohol and drinking. I went to visit this campus, and I had a couple other schools that I had, like, scholarships and opportunities to go. And this one, it was a spring day. It's like the middle of the day, 2 in the afternoon. There's these fraternity houses on the campus. And there's guys on the roof with kegs drinking in the middle of the day on, like, a Tuesday. And I said, I'm going to this school. You know, academics, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't care, you know. This is where I'm going. And I had a friend who went there, and it was perfect. And I had taken, I guess important for my later story, I took an Army scholarship at this time to Army ROTC. And I thought it would toughen me up because I didn't feel very tough. I always felt a lot of fear, anxiety, you know. You know, people say, yeah, I'm not a fighter, I'm a lover. You know, I was neither. You know, I was just kind of felt like a real wimpy guy. Never really, so I thought it'd toughen me up. And I also thought, yeah, I thought it would just kind of like do something for me, you know. And some of it, the toughening up part didn't happen, but, you know, it did a lot for me. It helped me, it did help me in a lot of ways. But at the time, you know, you'll see it's had some interesting consequences because alcoholic behavior is not really that conducive to an Army officer anymore. Maybe back in the day, but today they're pretty, you know, they don't like that. When you're a cadet, however, you can drink like a fish. So I went to this school, and it was the best. You know, no parents, you know, no AA parents, nobody leaving AA literature around the house. Like my mom, little hints, you know. You know, do you think you're an alcoholic? 44 questions. You know, because she was catching on way before I did that there was a problem with my drinking. Even though I wasn't drinking that much, there were things happening, and she knew it. And so she was trying to drop me some little hints along the way. My response to those kind of things was wonderful, you know, especially when I got to college, you know. Mom, that A, you know, God doesn't exist. It's all bullshit. I was an altar boy, by the way, and went to college. But then I decided God was dead. It's all crap. You know, A, you did it all yourself. It's all just, you know, a crutch. You know, none of that's real. And, you know, that's the kind of guy I was. Telling these stories, those things always get out of sequence. So college. I got in there, and my drinking took off. No real supervision. No brothers or priests telling me what to do. Unfortunately, also nobody telling me to go to class. So my first semester, I did very well in drinking, you know, and I joined I joined everything. I just started joining things, you know. And I was doing Army ROTC, and I was on the fencing team, and I got in really good shape physically. Although, even though I was drinking, I was still the rest of the time I was working out now, and it was great. And I ended up on the dean's list, you know, my first semester. That is the dean's other list. There's two lists. There's one list you want to be on, and there's a list that you don't want to be on. And I was on that list. I had a 1.79 GPA. I was a physics major, and my grade in physics, intro to physics, was F. Frowned upon. not good. I just, you know, didn't do very well. And, I think my drinking might have been a contributing factor. I did a lot of weird things, and it's funny. We went by a bunch of the battlefields on the way here. I think we got off earlier than we were supposed to off 66, and we kind of zipped through on 29 through these battlefields, and then hey, we're coming back to 66 again. What happened? And whatever. But we went through like Manassas, where And I've been to Gettysburg a few times, and every time, I mean, I've had two different Gettysburg stories, and both of them involve a lot of drinking and trouble. You know, and I'm banned from Gettysburg College, but that's a, there's a reason for that. But I remember my first year I went to, yeah, I went to Gettysburg for some school thing, and I was, you know, drunk and stupid, and I don't think, I've never been there sober. I wrote that down, something to do. See the battlefield sober. Even though I was drunk twice when I saw it. That first year we had a lot of trips and I had a lot of fun, but jeez. One of the places I traveled a lot, I was in the marching band, which is geeky, but we drank a lot. And we hung out, you know, we went all over the place and got in trouble. And I would, you know, we had just these experiences at college. It was very. Go to the football game, and then do our halftime thing, and then I go back to the stands and drink Mad Dog 2020. That was our official drink for some reason. And it was cheap, and you know, and then we'd chase it with some more high-quality stuff like National Bohemian in the 16-ounce refillable bottles. Has the grit on the bottom, you know what I mean? Like, in case you're hungry, you know. And just stupid. I did a lot of, you know, I would tell stories over and over again. And to me, they were really funny, but really, they were all the same thing. They were all pretty pathetic. I mean, I didn't really do anything. You know, I went to these events, but it wasn't like we were doing anything exciting. We would just go and drink, and I became good at all the drinking games. You know, I was, like, very adept at any drinking game. And the thing is, the funny part is, though, I would play to lose, so to speak. Because in most games, the person who is winning makes the other person drink. Which is, to me, a stupid waste, because I don't want to drink. So I would do something like, you know, we're playing a dice game and called three-man, and when we roll a three, that means one guy has to do all the drinking, and everyone else rolls a three makes him drink or something. And I would roll, and if you're the three-man, if you roll a three, then you can pass it on. It doesn't make it. It's stupid. It's just a drinking game. But the point, I would do something like get to the point, get the dice roll that gets me out of it and pass it on, and I'd name myself the new guy again, you know what I mean? I keep the drinking up. It's like, I would name myself the guy who has to drink. In every drinking game, I'd be like, I play to lose, you know? And I'm not making any sense because the game is so stupid that I can't explain it. I don't remember the rules anymore. We play these dumb games. We play beer pong, which I became like the champion of, which is how many of my hours I spent on these games, I can't even tell you. But I loved it. I loved the whole atmosphere of those kind of things. Let's fast forward. I went through two more years like this. What I would do periodically is I would clean up my act. So first semester I had a 1.79. Second semester I was working a fraternity as well and doing all this stuff. I got out of that. I didn't do the fraternity second semester. I bared down. I got 3.9, you know. And then I had to go to summer class as well. I took some summer class up there. And then the next year, you know, and this would be, I would cycle like that. You know, I'd have good semesters and bad semesters. You know, I had a semester where I was social chairman of my, I joined this other, like fraternity thing later, and, you know, I was social chairman, which means I had keys to the liquor cabinet. I ordered all the alcohol. You know, I had keys to the kegs. I would organize the parties. And we had this group of guys. It was weird. It was like, we had a bunch of guys who weren't drinkers, who wanted to do other things. I didn't like those guys. And then I had the hardcore drinkers, you know. And so these guys would say, hey, we want to do something else, something. And I'd be like, just shut up, you know. We're gonna have this party. We'll have, like, great events like Bad Beer Night where, you know, I'll get the worst beers I can find and we'll vote and see which is the worst. Ha ha, isn't that fun? This is the kind of stuff I came up with that sounded really exciting. It was just pathetic. And time went on. I had no relationships going on. I had no girlfriends. I had occasional drunken fumblings with girls that I wasn't even attracted to in any way. And, you know, I would often find out what happened on a weekend. On a Sunday, people would tell me what I'd been up to. And I'd say, wow, that sounds cool, you know, because I didn't know what I'd done. And I was kind of an angry guy when I wasn't drinking as time went on. I wasn't a happy guy. I was either depressed or angry a lot of the time. But when I was drinking, I was kind of a happy-go-lucky kind of guy in a way. And I'd wander around. I was a wanderer, always looking for a good time. And I'd just go all over the place. So my junior year, this is when it all changes. Having my usual drunken night, and I don't know if you know, I guess they call them beer bongs now, but we called them funnels. And I made this one out of pool tubing that could fit two pitchers in it at a time, because I thought that was a good idea. And I did a bunch of those, and one night, and then we were playing some other drinking game, and I was winning / losing, depending how you look at it. To me, I was a winner because I was drinking, you know. And I did my usual wandering around act, and I woke up in the hospital, and something happened. Now, this day, I don't know what happened, but I nearly died. And usually when someone says, wow, I had a near-death situation, a normal person could tell you what happened. I cannot. I have no idea what happened. I know I woke up in the hospital with a cracked pelvis and a cracked vertebrae and a subdural hematoma and lacerated kidney and a couple other things. My blood alcohol level was 0.37, which is, 0.47, I'm sorry. For losers. 4.7. You know, the near coma. You know, it's like kind of a coma level. The interesting part is most of what I drank that day was beer. But I did it by the funnel, so I kind of like concentrated. I don't know what happened. I either got hit by a car. They found me in a road down the bottom of the hill. And just like I said, I don't know what happened. And so this was really bad. And when this happens, you know, as some of you may or may not know, there's something that happens. They send you to Alcoholics Anonymous. They sent me to the school counselor. They sent me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And on top of that, I was also in trouble with the Army. They didn't like this because I was supposed to go to camp that summer, you know, training, and I was all broken up. So that wasn't good. And so I went to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. So let me describe my impression of AA from the beginning. And maybe some of you will relate. I hated it. I hated everything about it. I felt I had no reason to be there. And I judged all the people. And I took no action. That's what I did. And here I came in. I was on crutches, obviously. And I didn't mention, by the way, this is how I affected other people. I didn't know this until years later. So this is a retrospect thing, too. But first of all, my dad got there in 2 hours. It's about a 3-hour drive. He made it in 2 hours. My parents were told that I was dying and I wasn't going to make it. Then when they got to the hospital, they were told that I wouldn't walk properly again. I didn't know any of this until years later, because by the time I got back out of the fog, it was evident that I was going to be okay. But they didn't know that for a long time, you know, for hours. I don't know how many hours. 12 hours they had to go thinking I wasn't going to make it or wasn't going to walk. But I never thought I hurt anybody or affected anybody by my drinking, because I didn't have a wife and I didn't have kids and I didn't have, I thought if I'm hurting anybody, I'm just hurting myself. So fuck off. You know, people in it, I've just cursed into the mic. That's bad. Please erase that reel. Okay, so I was just distraught in a... I hated Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went to meetings, and as soon as I got a little better, I healed up. I mean, I was really lucky, you know, in retrospect. But to me, it became another drinking story later on, this whole accident. I didn't stop drinking that. That was 1989. I didn't stop drinking. A couple months later, I was off crutches. First weekend, I was off crutches. I was better. And I went to... a party, and I had 2 beers. I put it down. And I went home. Proving that I was not an alcoholic. Right? So, if you may have, like I did, a definition of alcoholism, to me, an alcoholic was like my dad was. By now, he was sober, by the way. I didn't tell that part of the story, but I didn't see most of his journey, because it was off-site. But he eventually got sober. But when he was in his prime, he couldn't go a day without drinking, without getting the shakes. He couldn't, you know, he was a disaster, you know, and he was, you know, in his 40s and he was whatever. And I figured unless I was in that kind of condition, I couldn't be an alcoholic. If I could take 2 drinks and put it down and not have to continue, I couldn't be an alcoholic. if I didn't have to keep drinking, you know, and if I didn't get the shakes, and if all that stuff didn't happen, I couldn't be an alcoholic, I figured. But that's not what our book says. Our book doesn't say that at all. So if you look at the book Alcoholics Anonymous, it says something quite different. And I have a great quote, and I can't remember what it is. I'm sure there's a book here. But anyway, it doesn't matter. But the point is, the book doesn't say that. And what I didn't see was that someday, when my dad was in his 20s, he was not like that. I didn't think about that. He was like me when I was in my 20s. But I figured you had to get that bad before you could be an alcoholic. What I didn't know is it's not really that. It's if once I started drinking, I was either drinking or I wasn't drinking, so to speak. I could not drink and tell you predict what I was going to do, 100%. There's no way. Like if that particular night, I had two and I went home. But other nights, I could have two, intending to just have two, you know, and end up in Mexico. You know what I mean? I mean, anything could happen. You don't know. Once you have one, who the hell knows what's going to happen? Because once I have one, there's a change in my mind. Even before that, sometimes, I just see the alcohol and I make a decision somewhere to drink. I change my mind, I alter my reality. And suddenly and physically, once it's in me, all bets are off. All bets are off as an alcoholic. I think it's definitely in my thinking. And I know that once I drink, I don't know what's going to happen, for sure. And although not every time I drank, something bad didn't happen, but every time something really bad in my life happened, I was drinking. I mean, that's for sure. So, just... But I had no desire to be here. I judged everybody. Like I said, I was arrogant. Intellectually arrogant. Thought I was smarter than everybody. And I was younger than most of the people in the meeting I went to. It's not true the meeting I'm in today, the home group I'm in. But back then, in Easton, Pennsylvania, there was nobody in their teens. Yeah, I was 19. I wasn't even 20. I was 19. There was nobody in their teens at these meetings that I saw. So what I did was, I identified out. I decided I am not like these people. I don't have to do what they're doing. I'm not going to do what they're doing. I do have some kind of problem, obviously, but I don't have to do what they're doing. There's some other way, because I don't want to do this crap, especially this God crap. I don't even want to think about that. You know? So I drank again, thought I had it under control. The very next weekend, I said, now I know I'm not an alcoholic, therefore I can drink as much as I want, which is a strange kind of logic, but that's what I figured. So the next weekend I just went hog wild, you know, back to the old ways, and that night I slipped in a pool of beer and broke my ankle. And you know, luckily I had a pair of crutches handy, so I was able to get back on them. The Army was very unhappy about this behavior. They were done. So I healed up from that, and I don't know. I went back to drinking soon after. Again, stayed sober for a little while, went to a few meetings, and this was my pattern for years. I'm not even going to believe. Basically, my pattern was I would drink, get in some kind of trouble, go back to Alcoholics Anonymous, relate out, not do anything, not take any action. I didn't read any of our literature. I had the literature, but I think, you know, I didn't do anything with it. Didn't crack the cover of the book and read it, you know. You know, it might rub off. You don't want to do that. And I never did anything. I just went to meetings. Once in a while, I'd raise my hand and share and complain about my poor circumstances. I mean, at first, I would complain about my, you know, talk about how I'd gotten there, talk about my parents. That's what I would talk about. And that spring, the Gettysburg stories, actually, well, that was one of my typical drunken things where we were going to Gettysburg to look at the battlefield. That spring, we were going to Gettysburg to look at the battlefield as an ROTC thing, you know. And what we did is we hooked up with another fraternity over there in Gettysburg College. And we went to this huge party, and I wandered off, as usual. I had some interesting adventures, I think. And I woke up the next day in some kind of academic building. I don't know what I was doing. I didn't make it back to the house where everybody else did. And I got in a lot of trouble, because when you're in a military thing and you wander off on your own, and there's an officer, I mean, this major who was responsible for us, it was bad news. They were not happy. And I got a lot of shit for that one. And I was getting more and more trouble. My cadet record was not shiny and nice anymore. There was, like, a lot of little marks. You know what I mean? There was lots of counseling statements. And trouble was happening, but, you know, I didn't care. And I graduated somehow, went to my Army camp, did okay. And somewhere along the way, I had decided, when I'd been in the hospital, I had decided, the hospital was a terrible place. I was pre-med by that point. I'd switched from physics to biology. When I was in the hospital for that big stint, I was, I decided that I didn't want to be a doctor, because I suddenly realized that I have to work with sick people in the hospital. It had never occurred to me before, you know? And I realized I didn't like this, so, because they were very callous. They had no understanding for my pain. And, but the truth is, I was afraid, I realized, and I'm glad I did this, because emotionally I knew that I couldn't handle it, doing what the doctors did. There was a guy next to me screaming for like 3 hours, because there's some test they needed to do, but they couldn't give him any pain medication or anything, or knock him down, until they got this result, because they needed to know what was wrong with him. And I was like, God damn, I can't handle this, you know what I mean? And the people who came to get me, they just didn't care, you know, I mean, they came in, I had like, they just kind of flipped me onto the gurney, and I'm like, and then they like took me through the door, and I had a catheter in it, and they caught the catheter, got caught in the door. I equate that to guys like being kicked in the balls from the inside out, you know, it's not good. And I said, I don't want to be one of these people, you know, I don't want to be callous, but I think emotionally I'd get all torn up if I didn't become callous. Sorry, Rasheed. Anyway, so I decided not to go. I had a biology degree. I didn't know what to do with it. So I applied to grad school, and I got in. So I graduated, got my commission in the Army, which was pretty neat. Still know how I did that. And the great thing is those records are sealed. It never comes out. It's a cadet record. Just kind of, it's in a file cabinet somewhere in the United States somewhere. I hope no one ever reads it. In my bid for Congress. So, you know what I mean? We found some records here. Can you answer this question, Doctor? Anyway, I apologize to my constituents. So that all was behind me. And now I was making a new start, you know, and I went to grad school back near my house on Long Island in Stony Brook. It's actually, who knew, it turned out to be a good place. It was like my safety school. But it turned out I had a really good program in science. So I went there, and this is when I thought the dark years began. Anyway, because for the next years I went in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and everything was getting worse. Life was gray. I had all these things I had wanted, and it just was awful. I would go in and out of AA because I was depressed, and I just wanted something to be different. And eventually, I don't know how to even describe it. I mean, for those of you who've been there, you know, I don't have to describe it, but it was just a place where I did not really believe anymore things were going to get better. And I hadn't lost everything yet, but it was going to happen soon. I was in trouble, and I didn't think drinking was no longer satisfying what it did before. I no longer had the good feeling when I drank all the, sometimes, but a lot of times it didn't really work that well. And, I don't know. I started doing things I swore I'd never do. Now I finally got a license in a car, which I'd never had till I was 22. Now I was drinking and driving. And I hated drunk drivers. You know, I had this thing, you know, when I was younger, you know, I had judgment, you know. Then I became one. You know what I mean? And joined the ranks. And, you know, came out of a blackout going down the highway about 80 miles an hour with tunnel vision, which I'd never had before but now experienced. And, trying to, like, you know, keep one eye open and try to stay between the lines, you know. And then I'm like, okay, am I going east or west? Because am I going towards him or away? I don't know where the fuck I am. I'm on the expressway. which way am I going? You know, I had no idea. And things like that started happening more. And it was just bad. And speed it up. I finally got sober. Well, a lot of things happened in between. So I had periods of sobriety, and then I drank again. Then I had periods of sobriety and drank again. And first time I ever got a sponsor, I finally got a sponsor. And the way I had a few months sober and I drank, and I didn't understand how it happened. And what happened was I had a party at my house for my friends. I invited my friends. You know, I was hosting a barbecue that had a couple kegs and some other things there, and a keg party, in other words. And I thought that was okay to host such a thing, and I wasn't going to drink. And I was so delusional, I didn't think I was going to, you know. I was so cocky. And I drank, and I couldn't believe it. And I went to a meeting that I'd never been to, and I got up, and it was a beginner's meeting, and I raised my hand, and I shared this, you know, tale of woe. And halfway, the people just started laughing as soon as I said that. And the guy who led the meeting cut me off, which I shocked. Because I've been to meetings where people are very nice to you. Oh, you're the newcomer. Oh, it's terrible. And you're so young. It's so wonderful that you're here. Such a young age. And, you know, you'll be okay. And they really handheld me. And I'm not saying some people need that. But I was a prick. I needed something different. And I got it that night. Because that guy stopped me. And then he said, oh, so what did your sponsor think of that idea of the keg party? And I said, well, I really don't have a sponsor. He goes, oh. Yeah, just a hunch. And then he started to like give me a hard time. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? And these guys, this is a rough meeting. And a guy came up to me afterwards and asked me if I wanted help and wanted to go through the steps. And offered to be my sponsor. And he only had like 8 months. And I didn't know this until later. But he was the perfect guy for me because he just knocked my arrogance out. He had been a physics major in college and had his own computer company. Yeah, I just told you, I had an F in physics in college. So I'm like, geez, this guy's smarter than me. Because I always figured I was smarter than everybody else, but this guy, I figured he's smarter than me, and he knows physics. Which is a stupid reason to get a sponsor, but it worked out real well for me. Because, you know, he was doing AA, and he had a sponsor, and he was working the steps, and he started taking me through it. I was to drink one more time after this, and here's how it happened. I went back to my college for a reunion. I had no business being there. But I sold my sponsor a story about why I was going back and all the good stuff I was going to do. And the minute and I went alone, of course. The minute my foot hit that campus, my thinking changed. I saw all my old friends. They all wanted me to drink. I held out for about 20 minutes. And during that time, I thought about all the alternatives. I was like, geez, I really shouldn't have done this. I should just go home. And it's a couple-hour drive, but so what? I'll just go home. There's an AA meeting tonight. I could go to the meeting. I could just take off and go to dinner and then go to the meeting, or, you know, I could hang out with some of the other people who aren't the drunks, because I mentioned there was a faction of us that were like normal guys who didn't drink. And I thought about it for a while, and what eventually spit out of my alcoholic brain was, oh, fuck it. I'm drinking, you know? I couldn't bring an argument that made sense not to drink. And the reason is I had no higher power. There was really nothing to combat the insane thought. And because I hadn't been interested in the steps, really, at all, or very little. I had actually done some kind of fourth and fifth step, but it was like about four or five names, no details, and there was no part, like there's a part where it talks in the book, it has those columns, but then in the text it talks about looking at your part in each situation, and I didn't do that. And my sponsor was kind of new, and he didn't like jump on me about that. So I talked about what they'd done to me and how it affected me, and that was it. And I didn't talk about, hey, you know, what happened before that? You know? Oh, yeah, I started it all off, actually. You know? So I hadn't done very much step work. I really didn't have any connection with the higher power. I had nothing to combat my insane thinking, and I drank. And I was alone. I was alone because I thought I could handle it alone. You know? So I drank again, and I came home, and that night, two things happened. First, I drank as much as I ever drank. I got as physically drunk. I threw up as usual, you know. Had kind of a gray out. Because I could kind of, you know, I was kind of felt dissociated from what was going on. You know, I got those once in a while where you're just kind of like, you're stepping around, you don't really know what's going on. But I didn't get drunk. Meaning, the whole time I was there, I was thinking to myself, I shouldn't be doing this. I'm not supposed to be drinking. What happened? What did I do? You know? I'm throwing away my sobriety. This is terrible. You know, And that's all I could think of the entire night. Something had been taken away from me. That good feeling that I had as a teenager was gone. And all that was there was, I guess, remorse, you know, while I was drinking. It sucked. You know what I mean? I mean, that's the worst. You know, that doesn't even work anymore. I mean, that's terrible. my friend is not doing what I'm supposed to do. So I went back, and I had to think about whether I was going to... I had to make a choice. Am I going to keep drinking? Because I already drank. What the hell? Why should I go back? I might as well keep going. I could just not tell anybody. If it happened out of state, it might not count. You know, it happened in Pennsylvania. I'm sober in New York. Maybe it's still good. Well, I'm going to go to Pennsylvania. I still got continuous sobriety. Well, just so you know, that doesn't, yeah, it doesn't work like that. There's no jurisdiction. It's a universal thing, unfortunately. And I thought about it, and I did what any self-respecting, manly man would do. I called up my mommy, and I talked to her because she was sober, and I went to my group and I fessed up, and I said what I'd done. I picked up a new chip, and my sponsor told me, "We're going to start over again. You know what you did before. Obviously, you know it doesn't count now. We're going to go through the steps again." And he said, "What I want you to do is take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth." And I want you to sit at the meetings, and I want you to start listening. And I don't want to hear what you have to say, and we're going to start over again. You know, and that's what we did. And that was September 30th was the day, day after my last drink, and then I guess that was on like the 2nd of October when we had that little conversation. And I've been sober ever since. And so much has happened. Great news is I actually have a few minutes to talk about it. Usually, I haven't even gotten close to sober, and I've got 2 minutes left, and I got to sum up. I got about 9 minutes or so I can actually talk about sobriety a bit and what I did. And I'll tell you, what I did for the first couple of years was suffer in some way. Not a lot, but I mean, I was not, if anyone here is new sober, I was not happy for a while. So don't think that's not normal. I mean, well, maybe for me it was normal, or that was my experience. I was miserable for a while. Some ups, some downs. I had emotions I couldn't even identify, which were popping up. And it took a while for me to thaw out. I mean, I didn't like people. People would try to hug me. I would push them away. Do not touch me. You know what I mean? You happy AA people. You know? I hated it. And I had this one friend, George, who would, he'd just run after me, trying to hug me, laughing. Because he knew I'd be like, "Get away from me, get away from me. Come on, Billy, come on, get away from me," you know? Jesus. I was just tense, you know? I had friends I met a couple years ago told me when I was new, they thought they were afraid I was going to kill myself or somebody else. And either was possible. You know, I was not happy. things were, you know, and I was acting out in all sorts of ways when I was new. My work habits became a little worse. Like, I couldn't show up on Monday for a while. My boss started getting on me about that. I was in grad school, and he was like, "You're never in the lab on Monday, Bill. What's up with that?" You know, and he didn't like that. And the reason was because I wouldn't go to a meeting over the weekend. By the time Monday rolled around, I'd be insane, and I couldn't bear to face any people. So because I would have been sitting alone all day on Saturday and Sunday, and by Monday I'd just be like, "Oh, you know, it's crazy." I couldn't even think to face anybody. So I would I just couldn't show up, or I'll show up and I'll go in an hour and I put the covers back over my head, you know, and that's the kind of stuff I would do for a while. It took me a while to start to get a little better, and a sponsor that kind of pushed me along and pushed me into service. You know, they handed me a mop, which for a man of my intelligence I thought was a mop. You know what I mean? I should be the president, and and I would if I didn't have contempt for all of you. You know what I mean? But he handed me a mop. I started mopping the floor, and I had no social skills. I couldn't talk to anybody about it. How are you doing? You know? All right. You know, that was it. That's all that was coming out, like one-word answers. And service is what helped me start to talk to people, because when you're mopping with two other guys, you just start talking a little bit, you know? And when I started doing things with people is when I was able to make some connections, and that was the only way I could do it, because I just didn't have any... Some guys come with the blarney and the bullshit, and you just got to tell them to shut up. You know what I mean? I didn't have anything good. I didn't just have anything to say to people. So I had to like work my way into that through service. And I don't know. I got sober. This was up in New York in Port Jefferson. A little ways in, my sponsor stopped going to meetings. He had a lot of things going on in his life, but that's not. I mean, he just stopped going to meetings and focused on that. And he's still sober. He eventually started going back, but he was like the only guy I would talk to. You know, I respected him. I looked up to him, and he kept me accountable. So when he really wasn't going to meetings anymore, there was nobody else to fill the void because I didn't have anybody else because I had not made a network. I had not really had that many other people. I had a couple other friends, thank God. And I had my stepfather. And my mom remarried to a sober guy who'd been sober a long time. He is sober a long time today. And between them, they kind of kept me alive. But I was going a little crazy. I was finishing my thesis, so I was just working like, I don't know how many hours a week. I can't even imagine how many hours I was working a week. That's all I did. And but I finished it, got my PhD, and the Army wanted me back. Just one little story, because you know how we are in AA. Forget that story. We'll just move on. I moved to East. I went to the Army. I went down to Texas for 3 months and for training. I went to bars and clubs with all the people there. I didn't drink, but I was stupid, and I don't know how I stayed sober. I'd go to an AA meeting and then go to a club, and once or twice, I mean, there's some scary mental situations going on during that time. But, you know, there was no one to keep me accountable. I was just like, yeah, you know, that's fine. I'm not drinking. I can do whatever I want. And I came to D.C., and I got a place in Rockville, an apartment, my own apartment. I was working in the lab. I was a captain. Everyone calls me Captain Bill, and it's not a pirate reference. It's just, that's why they call me captain to this day. Every time I talk, usually that's what I get in my own group. Everyone goes, "Arr," you know? It's a long story, whatever. So, anyway, I started doing, and what happened was, I decided I need to get reinvolved in AA. And this is what shows me I'm powerless on my own. Okay, I don't know if my connection to higher power, there was some, but not much. And it had really fallen off in those months when I didn't have a sponsor. And when my meetings had fallen way off, and I was in Texas, I went to very few meetings. I tried to get reinvolved, and I was running the show, though. And I'm insane. See, my brain doesn't work properly when it comes to alcohol or much else, to be honest. So I decided I got a commitment at this meeting, a clubhouse meeting, that there was nobody, there was a blank spot on the blackboard, so I signed in, and maybe there'd be three or four people would come to that meeting. Most of them were court slips, nobody who was interested in doing anything. I started going to other meetings and meeting people, and I was interviewing for a sponsor. I did it for about a year. Nobody passed the test. But I was really sponsoring myself and running the show. And I got miserable. I got miserable sober and miserable in AA. And I went to about one meeting a week. Eventually, that's about what I tapered to. I filled those other nights with lots of activity, like, you know, television. And that was about it. And I was just, the world became gray again like it had been before. You know, everything was just kind of gray, and there wasn't much excitement. There wasn't much going on in my life, and I wasn't going anywhere. I wasn't doing anything. I had my own apartment. I had an apartment for 2 years. No one ever went to that apartment. Ever. You know? Because I had nobody in my life. I had no friends. I was in D.C. for a year, and I had, except for my work colleagues, I had nobody, you know. And what happened was I realized I was about to drink. Because there was nothing left. Or kill myself. I don't know if I was going to drink, because I knew there wasn't much left. Maybe I was going to kill myself. I don't know. I was very, very unhappy. And I decided I had to do something different. So I went to a meeting that I'd never been to before, and I ran into these two guys. And I shared about what was going on. And the guys who were leading that meeting, they came to me after the meeting, and they did something different. Not only did they, like, you know, people give you their phone numbers. They got my number. And they said, "What are you doing tomorrow?" And I said, "Check my calendar. You know, I had nothing going on." And they said, "We'll come get you tomorrow, and we're going to go eat dinner, and then we're going to go to the meeting, and you'll come with us." And something happened where I was willing, and I said, okay. You know, because I knew something had to change. And I think most of my good things in sobriety have been when I just said, okay. And that was my friends Travis and Mike, and they brought me, and they introduced me to somebody who became my sponsor. And started a new journey, you know, and I started going to a lot of meetings. I got a very active group and started doing things. And I reluctantly being pulled against my will, you know what I mean, most of the time. Even though I knew this is a little extreme, you know, because the people do a lot of things. And I had gone back to that point where I didn't like people, you know, I didn't want to. And now I was in the middle of a group of people who were very active and were trying to pull me along into things. And I don't know, I got involved again. I started doing a lot. I went to some conferences, started sponsoring people, and I started going to a lot of meetings, and I did a lot of service. And things, you know, life just got better. And what's happened since, I mean, you know, a lot of things have happened, good and bad. And now I got 2 minutes to talk about. Work improved, strangely enough. You know, I did pretty well there, and I've got a different job now. I started having relationships, and those were rough for me. I didn't know how to deal. I got this one relationship with this girl I met at work who was here on exchange. She's from South Africa. She came over for a while and then went home. So I started this long-distance relationship, which was like pure insanity. And she was the one, and I was going to make it happen. And everyone was telling me you're an idiot. I went over to Rome with a ring to propose to her about a year later, and showed her the ring, and she was really surprised. You know, it was great, you know, because she's like, I can't believe you did this. I was like, yeah. And then she said it 3 more times. And then, okay, let's turn that corner and move on to the yes, you know. And it didn't, you know, it didn't happen. I was, you know, whatever, 7 years sober or something, 8 years sober, and seven, I guess. And something I had decided was going to happen, I had scripted this out, didn't happen. She said, maybe. And then 6 months later, she still hadn't made up her mind. I had to end it, you know, because I'm like, I couldn't live with it. You know, I'm so lonely. Yeah, I'm in a relationship, but I'm lonely. You know, I've been in this for like a year and a half. It was rough. You know, it was a rough time. And but I got through that sober, and I learned a lot from it. You know, I learned a lot about me, and I learned a lot of things. And I started like learning. Then I got my new sponsor I have today, and made me date. Like, just date. Because I just met her and fell in love in 2 minutes, which is what I always did. He told me how to, like, date, like, you know, without doing, no sex, just date. Figure out what you like, figure out what you don't like, meet people, and then, you know, and now today I'm engaged, I'm going to be married this summer. You've met her, she came and spoke here some weeks ago, Lindsay, and I don't know what she said, I don't want to know, cause but she's great. And, you know, she's the greatest thing that ever happened and to me, and it was a result of following along with what I was told to do, you know, not my ideas. Not the script that I had made. I wouldn't have expected that I would have fallen for somebody like her at the time. But I was wrong, you know. And, you know, I've sponsored some people. Some of that's been painful. People have, this last year I sponsored a guy who I've sponsored him 3 times over a period of 5 years, you know. And I really wanted him to stay sober. I let him move into my place, and things looked like they were, but he wasn't interested in doing what we were doing. I mean, he just wasn't interested in it. You know, when it came down to, you know, he didn't want to drink, but he wasn't interested in doing this. And it was just really, some people just aren't interested, you know, at the time. Maybe in the future he's going to be. I have no idea what he's interested in doing or not. But it's just been, I've learned a lot through these experiences. You know, like, if there's somebody who wants to be sober and wants to try this way of life, I'll do anything I can to help them. And if they're not, I'm going to leave them the hell alone. You know, if you want to drink, you know, go at it. God bless. If you want to stay sober, do everything I can to help you. If you want to stay sober on your own and you don't want to do any of this, there's nothing I can do to make you. I can try as hard as I can, and it's not going to happen. So I've learned a lot of these lessons, and I still learn them. You know, I have a lot to learn. I hope I can remain somewhat teachable, because I usually like to think I have the answers. I'm out of time, and the amazing thing is there's like so much else that's happened. I've been all over the world, and there's so many stories about different places I've been. Just in sobriety. When I was drunk, I didn't go anywhere. Didn't do a damn thing. But in sobriety, I've done a lot. The last 2 years, I've been to, you know, 4 countries, 5 countries, meetings in 5 different countries, and most states of the union. Not most, I'd say half, sorry. I'm lying again, sorry, Mike, I'm lying. But it's been a long, long haul story here, and thanks for letting me share.